I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com. Adrian Gardner, you've actually spoilt me. You brought me out here to Founders Lodge, where it all started.
Correct. And that was in 1989 when I bought the first piece of land. And we started, this was actually just to be a private sort of getaway for myself from Port Elizabeth. I had sold a stud farm prior to that, that had in Plettenberg Bay.
But 1989, this is now the depth of despair for South Africa. Yeah,
correct.
Mandela's still in jail, ANC still banned.
Yeah.
So what got you?
Well, you know, I'd sold the stud farm and had a bit of money. And my background is growing up in Zimbabwe, where I was brought up on game farms and cattle farms and everything. So I had Africa in my blood. Bush in my blood, and had a bit of money, and I thought, you know what, I think I want my own little piece of Africa. So I went back to Zimbabwe, and then I also went to the traditional areas of South Africa, you know, we call it the Kruger area, Sabi Sands, and also the other areas near Bight Bridge and that sort of thing. Then I thought to myself, you know what, if I go and do something there, I'll never get there. I must try and find something close to Port Elizabeth. And you know, we were talking a lot of sport this morning with Anne Lee and rugby and cricket and all the rest of it. And I was sitting at a cricket game in Port Elizabeth, and a guy next to me called Arthur Rudman said to me, I know you're looking for a farm. There's a piece of land for sale near a little village called Alistair, and it's 1,200 hectares. It's owned by some doctors in Johannesburg, and they want to sell it. Why don't you go and have a look there? So I came out here and looked at it there, and I said to myself, wow. You know, I've lived in the Eastern Cape then for about 20 years, and I didn't realize just how beautiful it was. And started doing some research about which animals were here. And a guy wrote a book called Skeed, and I fortunately met him just before he died. And he recorded all the animals that were here. And in fact, I think the Kruger should have been here because of the different species that occurred in this area, and the carrying capacity was better than the Kruger.
What would it have been called then?
Wouldn't it be called
Kruger, because no. Obviously he was up north.
Yeah, exactly.
But the point was being this is that should have been the area.
Well, you know, and then the 1820 settlers came in, and you know, they were obviously told you got a farm. So as you saw when we drove through, they cleared a lot of the land, and they started growing things here. They tried everything. You know, they even tried tobacco here. So, and then they obviously had cattle, sheep, and I mean, just in front of the first lodge that we built in front of Longwy was all irrigated land with vegetables and everything.
Adrian, we've come out of Port Elizabeth, we've gone towards Grahamstown, and then branched off to Alistair. Just for people who vaguely have an understanding of the geography of the area, how far are we from Kwapeha?
It's probably about 80 k's, it's an hour's drive.
All right, so it's close enough for you, being in what was then Port Elizabeth, to pop out over the weekends.
Well, I'll tell you what happened when I started it. And then that was 1,200 hectares that I bought then. Then the next farm came, and I had 3,000 hectares. And we'd just gone through a seven-year drought. And then the next farm came. And it wasn't long before I had 11,000 hectares. And I thought to myself, hang on, this is no longer a weekend farm. So I used to get up at 4 or 5 in the morning, come out here and see what they were doing, give the instructions for the day. I could be back in the office by 9 or 10.
What did you farm?
No, I was then converting it.
Into game.
You know, to put some game back in here, and having done the research. And then I thought to myself, you know what? I've got money involved here. I need to make this into a commercial proposition. We need to make it into something that works. Why do you have to go to the Kruger, where it's malaria? All the big five reserves were malaria. Or could I have a malaria-free game reserve within an hour of a big city and an airport?
But when last was game here in? And we are sitting in a railway carriage, you're going to tell us about in a moment. And looking out here, it's magnificent bush. But presumably when you bought this, it wasn't bushveld like we're seeing today.
A lot of it was, because you've seen the lands that were cleared. And let me tell you what was left here in terms of game. Obviously, the farm that I bought, the first one, was a hunting farm. So the game was here. In the 80s, they brought game in, but it was for hunting. That game was on the farm. So there are no big five. So it was like kudu, eland, springbok, bushbuck, that sort of thing. That was what was brought in those days. So we brought in the big five. And the lions had been extinct from 1860. So we brought the first lions back here.
So the lions had been shot out, presumably.
Shot out by the settlers, yeah.
By the farmers, because the lions would have eaten their livestock.
So when I arrived here, what was here, on the other farms that I bought, besides the hunting farm that I'd bought, were kudu, bushbuck, and duiker, and a very rare species called a blue duiker. That's basically what was here. So there was nothing else. And but obviously they had lots of sheep and goats, which they took off when I bought the farms. You know, there were 16 people employed on the 10 or 12 farms that I bought. Before COVID, Jamwarian founders were employing 460 people. So that's the difference between farming and making it into a tourism attraction.
You've already leapfrogged to Jamwari. So you put together these farms. I presume that the other farmers in the area saw this rich guy from Port Elizabeth, who'd made quite a lot of money through his entrepreneurial pursuits, coming to the area, buying up farms. Presumably the prices went up. Farmers are not silly.
No question. Our first farm bought for 300 rand a hectare. And then the last one I bought was for 1,000 rand a hectare. And we're going back 30-odd years, eh? 32 years. So it was very interesting. And let me tell you, I had a call, a meeting here with all the farmers to tell them what I was doing. They thought I was a joke. And one guy got up and said, my grandfather shot the last brown hyena here. I said, I'll bring it back. And we did. So they all thought it would never, ever work. And, you know, so they thought it was a joke, just like they thought when I built a stud farm in Plettenberg Bay, that it would never work.
What made you so confident?
Because I just read the history of what was here, and that if we put the animals back, that a big five here, which weren't here. I mean, we had adder, which had elephant. And that was the biggest sort of animal you could have in the Eastern Cape here. There might have been some buffalo, but there was certainly no white rhino. There were certainly, the leopards were just considered a vermin, you know, because they were eating the farmer's sheep and cattle. So, you know, the big five wasn't here. Lions weren't here, as I said, from 1860. So it was an ambition of mine to put back what was here and then obviously go out and sell it to as a tourist destination of a big five game reserve.
How did that go?
It was tough. It was very tough. And the interesting thing was, between 1992 when we opened and the year 2000, when we put the lions in eventually, and we could only say that there were lions were free-ranging on this reserve, it was considered a weekend thing, and it was tough. The minute we had the big five in properly, different story. It became very popular.
Global market?
Global, international global market. We managed, and mainly European and English. Not the Americans. The Americans still to this day, you know, Kruger's on the map. Kruger, Vic Falls, Botswana. So we still... But although our tour operating company has an office in Austin, we still battle to get Americans to come here. And COVID has made a huge dent in our business.
It must have throughout the hospitality industry. But just getting back to the alternative to the Kruger National Park, you're a long way from Kruger. You're a long way from Johannesburg, but you don't have malaria.
But we're close to Cape Town. We're an hour away, and 90% of the people, of the first-time visitors, international visitors that go to Cape Town, we did the research, go to a game reserve.
So they go to Cape Town, then fly to
either
Kabeja,
to Kruger. And no, but they used to go to Kruger or Botswana or whatever. Now it's an hour away, plus another hour's drive.
So you, Cape Town, PE?
1 hour in the plane.
And then you're
an
hour's drive.
1 hour to get here.
And there's no malaria tablets?
No.
So that's...
That was our big USP.
But you say since COVID...
You know, it's been hard because, I mean, there are international guests coming in, but there's still not enough flights. And the international guests are majority of American, so they're not coming here. And we're into winter now. So we always had a winter when we would have our local market would support us. So, you know, the local market's done a lot of the local game reserves. But just to give you an interesting statistic is that although those farmers all said that it would never work, do you know there's 16 equivalents of Shamwari in the Eastern Cape today? So the Eastern Cape has definitely become a wildlife destination in Southern Africa, which it wasn't 30 years ago. They had adder. But nobody would come here for a game experience.
Now you can, but you don't own it anymore. You own the property that we're looking at, maybe 500 hectares.
Yeah, Founders Lodge, where it all began, and we have traversing rights on Shamwari. So, you know, I just say to guests, you know, if you really want the history of how it all happened, you know, come and stay with us because...
Yeah, and I guess our community, business community, local people who are looking for something different, where we're sitting right now is very different. This is an old SARNH railway carriage, beautifully upholstered as it used to be. It's almost looks a little bit like the Blue Train was back then.
Well, probably a bit more like probably Rovos Rail, and Rowan Foss is a good friend of mine. But the history of this is quite interesting in that this carriage was built in 1970. So I launched it as my own private carriage in 1992, which is 30 years ago. Now, what happened then was, you know, the harbours fell under SAR and H, South African Railways and Harbours, and they had one area general manager. And at that stage, we were doing all the exports of bulk minerals out of Zimbabwe because Barra was close to them. And South Africa helped them, but it all used to come through Port Elizabeth. I'm talking steel, asbestos, chrome, all that. And we actually shipped that and managed it with our crane business. And I got to know the area manager quite well. And he had his own private coach. And we used to go to Kimberley because he was a hunter. And we'd go up there and then we'd get in the carriage and we'd go to Newlands where we had a rugby box. And then we'd come back to Port Elizabeth in his private coach. And I've still got pictures of that, those incredible experiences. And I'm coming back one day and I said, you know, I think this is a bit unfair. Why can't I have a coach? He said, you can. I'll organize it for you. And he found this coach and we brought it to Port Elizabeth. And then there were still the coach builders of those days who could fix it up. So where we're sitting now was probably coupes and compartments, which we knocked out and made this beautiful lounge that we're sitting in now. And
so this was your coach?
My private coach.
You could put it on the railway lines?
So what I did was I did a deal with the railways that I could hook it onto any scheduled train trip. So in other words, if there was a train going to Joburg or Cape Town, they would hook me on, either at the back or the front, hopefully at the back.
What price? What ticket price?
It was amazing. I think I had a deal with them at like 2 rand a kilometre or something that they would figure me. And then quite interesting because the conductor was very interested in what we did here. So he used to spend a lot of time on my coach and then get off at the next station and go and do it.
I'm not surprised.
And also,
little upmarket to the normal.
And then I would obviously, we would forget certain things, you know, that our chef would have forgotten. So I used to have to go and get it from their carriage and car.
Was it just for holidays or did you use it for business?
No, I went up there. We did a lot of business up there. And do you know that I had permission to park it at the Wits private siding? There was a Wits siding at the university. So guys would come and see this. Who's this guy who's got a private coach in my office and home there? And they'd come to me quite a nice.
Anybody else in South Africa have a private coach?
No.
You and the president, maybe.
And the area managers,
Area manager.
And then I used to go to Cape Town and park it at Musenberg. They put me there. There was a siding there. And my home was up on the hill, and we used to use that as an office there. So when we went on holiday, we used to take the parrot, the dogs, and everybody in the coach down to Cape Town.
Adrian,
and that went on for about 10 years.
You know that the Transnet are now opening up the railway lines for third-party use.
I've read it, yes.
Are you thinking that maybe you could return to those old days and acquire a coach and go around South Africa?
I've done my bit in that, so I'd rather just go on Rowan's train or whatever the case is and not have the hassles. But then, you know, you asked me the question earlier, why did you bring it out here?
Yeah, so this is the same coach that you own.
You
went around South Africa, yeah. And then here it is sitting in the middle of the bush.
Under a proper station. You've seen that I've built a station with a ticket office and everything here. I want you to feel as though you are having the experience of being in a train. So anyway, what we did was, when I stopped using it, fortunately, right behind our crane and transport business was the main line to Johannesburg. So I got them to close the line for an hour and I took it over with our cranes and it became the canteen for our office for about 10, 15 years. And then we sold the crane business, but we still owned the premises and they didn't want to use this. So I thought to myself, well, why don't I bring it out here? Because if you're up in the Kruger area, they have sky beds and things like that. We can't have it here with our weather. You don't know whether it's going to blow or rain or whatever the case may be. So this is the equivalent of our sky bed. So you can come and stay at the lodge or you can come and have a night here or both. So the people that have come here, and the feedback is that it's the most incredible experience because they come you book the coach and you come with your children. And then, as you know, we have a partnership with Bear Grylls and they do a Bear Grylls experience out in the bush. And we've had some amazing feedback. So it was just an idea of doing something different that nobody else has done. You know, you've got the train on the Kruger on the bridge there, Salati, I think it's called there. But it's very different to this. This is as authentic as it can get. You know, you can shower and use the inside toilet, but then in the ticket office, as you saw, is a great shower where you've got a view of the whole game reserve. So it's something very unique in terms of a hospitality offering. And we've just tried to get that to add on to what we've got at Founders to make it as though we've got something that's very different here. Please come and see us here with no malaria and have a unique experience.
And the price point?
The price point obviously varies in season because you've got to take it on your own. But basically, I think the current price on your own, which is per night, when you can take four or five, you can take five people, is about $9,000. In the season, hopefully, we'll get a bit more than that. But I mean, it includes game drives, includes all your food and beverages and everything else. So if you take five people, it's very cheap. It's under $2,000 a night per person.
And if you come as a couple,
then you're at $4,000 a night, which is the same as a lodge.
Yeah, and you could stay here rather than staying in the lodge. And what's how long has the siding been up? It's called Founders Siding, so it's its own railway station, as you say.
We've been open now about 4 months, 4 to 5 months.
And how's it gone so far?
Yeah, I think it's been quite interesting is that we've had quite a lot of exposure, but I think that it's I'm hoping the season's going to be a lot better. What we hope is that people book three nights and take two nights there and one night here, or whatever the case may be. But we have a lot of local weekend business that comes here. So it's taking on for sure, because the reviews we're getting on TripAdvisor and everything are phenomenal.
Adrian, why do you still care? I mean, you've been there, done that. You've got a hotel in London. You've got hotels all over the world. Why is this such an important part in your life?
You know, it's all part of what we stand for. You know, the collection, man and nature together, is sustainable, Mantis. And you know that we sold 50% of our brand, the Mantis brand, to Accor. And that was really one of the main reasons, was to create a community conservation fund. So the last chapter of my life, I'm really wanting to devote more to conservation and education. I'm sure you know that I was also one of the founders of Stedin University in Port Alfred, the only university in Southern Africa or in the world where you can do part a semester in wildlife and conservation. And we actually have our own game reserve that we rent. So education to me, and I've put a lot of kids through there that I've paid for on bursaries, and to see how their lives have changed and what's happened to them, it probably gives me as much pleasure as making a profit. To see how you change lives. So I want to do that a lot more with the communities. And you know, we're going to go there tomorrow to Hopewell, where we're going to build the first big five game reserve between two cities. So New York has Central Park, London has Hyde Park and these things. So we're going to have a game reserve between Port Elizabeth and or Quebeca and Kareka, or Port Elizabeth and Uitenhage, which will have the big five on there. Now, the big five that we're putting on there are animals that are going to have to be rewilded, because it's not that big. It's 3,000 hectares. So we will find elephants that are, say, in a captured situation that we'll rewild. We're going to have a breeding program for rhinos, and we've got buffaloes are going to go on, and we're going to put elephant there. Again, elephants that have been used in stupid situations where, you know, they use them in zoos or circuses or whatever, to rewild them. So I think it's going to be something quite unique, but that is to do with a community that's right next door to us. So we're going to be involved with an incredible person called Titch Smith, who's been very big in community work and what he's done there. And he's helping us to get the communities involved. So, you know, to answer your question is why am I still involved, is I want to make a difference. You know, I think...
How old are you now?
I turn 80 in March. So I've got a long way to go.
So the last 80 years of your life, you're going to be going at the same pace as you went in the last 80.
I think for the first time I'm really starting to feel it, and that's because I've had a double knee replacement, and COVID's taken a bigger effect than I thought, you know, from that point of view. I didn't really expect it to be as tough as it is now, but I still, you know, I've been married for 54 years, and if I went to stay at home all day, you know, I don't know what would happen. she's been a wonderful wife who's followed me on my journey, and I'm exceptionally, I think, proud to have two boys who are in the business, and a daughter who farms with her husband nearby in Tarkastad. But the two boys, Murray and his partner Sean, have the travel business called Gilt Edge, and Paul looks after the Gilt Edge, the Bear Grylls partnership that we have, and he lives in London. And I think I was very lucky, and so my wife, to have our kids at a young age, because they're like younger brothers to me, you know. So Hopefully that they will, Paul will come back and take over what's the business, but it's tough at the moment. It really is tough. So, you know, you talk about the hotels, they're all sort of badged hotels, you know, in other words, they've got the Mantis brand on them, and that's why we did this, the deal with Accor to get a distribution system and a loyalty program. And I really want to get that loyalty program to work, because as I mentioned to you, you know, if we could only get the members of that loyalty program, whatever it might be, 100 million people, to donate a dollar worth of their points to us, can you imagine the difference I could make in the community and into wildlife and what Africa's all about? Take the wildlife out of Africa, why would we get a visitor? It's something, it's an asset we've got that no other continent in the world's got. So please help me, and I know, and I'm very proud of the association that we have with you, your colleagues, and your business. And I just want to conclude this interview by saying thank you, Alec, because I mean, your support, you know, you've supported us in quite a few initiatives that we've had, and it means one hell of a lot to me. So, I mean, if you can just, we talked about it, how we're going to help the conservation effort, how we're going to try and get loyalty programs, and I've spoken to Investec Bank and that sort of thing, to be more involved in conservation and protecting our wildlife, the luckier we'll be, and the best continent in the world we'll become if we protect it.
Oh, Adrian, it's always good talking with you. We are short on optimistic South Africans at the moment, but I know if I'm ever feeling down, who to call. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.